Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
You are listening to the Life Autistic Podcast with Ryan Summers. When I hit my 40s, after a lifetime of thinking, what the fuck is wrong with me? I finally discovered that I was undiagnosed autistic. This podcast is my journey, my discoveries, learning about autism, about my autism, about life with autism, and having conversations with other autistic adults, sharing our experiences, relating to one another. And hopefully anyone listening can learn a little bit about us, learn a little bit from us about the life autistic. Available on any podcast app that you use. Hope you enjoy and give us a shout if you got questions or comments. Thank you.
Nebuchadnezzar.
Nice.
It's Omnipolo. It's double IPA. Fucking dope.
Yeah, they have a lot of cool breweries around here.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah. I went to...
Paul is the rep for Bose.
What's that?
The beer you're drinking?
Yeah.
Paul lives in London. He's the rep for them for Southwestern Ontario.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I know them from when I lived in Newmarket. There was a first brewery there, and it was called Hungry Brew Hops. And they used to always come to do tap takeovers.
Nice.
And yeah, they're nice guys.
Yeah, cool. Yeah,
actually, they gave me a shirt and a hat a while ago.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. All right. So we're talking to my friend Ryan Summers. Dude, it's been 20 years.
Yeah.
Ish. I don't want to age either of us. But like, so we met. I was a flyer guy for RMG. You were promoting one of my my favorite weekly show to promote. It wasn't like work for me on Thursday nights when I had to do In Divine Style. It felt like just a pub night with the boys and listen to hip hop. And then you did Battle Axe stuff, right?
I worked for them briefly.
Yeah.
Very briefly, yeah.
And then you did OK Cobra and a bunch of rapping stuff.
Yeah.
So how did you get from there to now? Very short story. That's like 20 years worth.
I don't know, man. I don't know. How do you get from anywhere? It's like you just make one step and then, you make another step, and then you make another step, and you look up one day, and there you are.
Yeah. Well, you moved to London after you left Toronto, right?
Yeah, dude, I went all over. Like, I left Toronto. I went to Montreal. I was in Montreal for a couple years. Because I was in TO. Like, at the end, I was doing A&R at Universal. And I was, like, still writing for a bunch of magazines, like Vice and different shit like that. And doing the night. And I just was burnt out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was going hard for years. Like, for years. Like, just 24/7 going hard. And I just was like, I need a fucking break. And I was just writing and writing, but never like recording or doing anything. So I ended up going to Montreal. I went up there to visit a couple times and like hooked up with my homeboy, Tim, Record Face. And he had just done like a little EP with another buddy of mine, John, who I used to actually have a rap group with like way back in high school, like our first attempt at being MCs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Did a little EP and it was super dope and the beats were super dope. And I was like, went up and hooked up with them in the studio one night. We did a little track together. Tim and I were talking. And at the time I started seeing this girl up in Montreal and I was in Toronto. So like Tim was there, he had a studio there. So I just was like, fuck it, man. It was at that point, I just wanted to like make music, you know? And I was kind of done with all the like industry shit. I'd learned a lot, but it wasn't really for me. I didn't want to be like a guy in a label office or something like that. You know, I was always kind of an industry like outsider. Like I never really was like an industry guy, you know. I sort of snuck in the back door and they tolerated me for a little while, but that it was never really my thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And there's a lot of reasons for that I didn't really discover until like 20 years later. I'm like, oh shit. Like I didn't know back then that I was autistic or any of this stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I just thought, oh, why am I having fucking anxiety attacks all the time? You know what I mean? Like crazy shit. So I moved to Montreal, recorded a bunch of shit with Tim. Ended up then going back to London for a while. Stayed in London for a bit. And then I don't know what happened after that. I was in London for a couple years, did a couple albums with Tim, with OK Cobra. Went, you know, we had a good time. Like we toured across Canada a few times and hit Europe a few times. And that was super fun. And then I ended up going to BC.
Cool.
I went out to BC like just on tour and I just fell in love with it. And my little brother and his wife had moved out there. And I just wanted to, you know, I just got sick of winter really. And I ended up in BC for like 5-6 years.
I was just listening to one of your episodes on your podcast and you were saying how you were like, I kept this with me because I thought it was totally amazing because I always thought you were a very social man. But it was like the way you picked up smoking is because you had an excuse to go to another room or go outside. And you just had like these mini conversations with people, but you never really had a full conversation with anyone at a party. And they're like, oh yeah, Ryan was there.
Yeah.
You know, was that like, did that come into the industry thing? Like when you were promoting and.
I don't know. It's like, you know, I drank a lot too back in those days. Because that, you know, self-medicating for the whole like awkwardness, social anxiety and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like back in those days when I first knew you, like when I go to Indivine Style, I'd be 2 or 3 beers in before I got there. Just at home, sorting through records, like deciding what I'm going to bring for the night. And I'd be like drinking a beer in the shower, you know, getting ready to go. And so that by the time I got there, I'd already had 2 or 3 Heinekens. I was like, okay, I can kind of deal with people. And as soon as I get there to Individe Style, to the club, the manager of the club, fucking awesome guy, Sal, I don't know where he is now, but I love him. It was our tradition every night. As soon as I got there, we'd sort of check, I'd check in with him, say, hey, see how things are going. He'd check in, see how things are going on our end. What's the plan for the night, blah, blah, blah. And then we'd always do a shot of Jager. So it was like by the time anyone else showed up, I'd already had a shot or two of Jager and I was on my 4th beer. And that was just me getting to like a level. where I could like function socially. You know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, you know, that part you're talking about in the podcast, like I look back on those things and it's like, I didn't know it at the time. You know what I mean? You look back and you understand why you did things.
Yeah.
And at the time you don't know why you're doing it. Like, and yeah, I used to be at parties and yeah, like I said, like you said, like on the podcast, like kind of like just bounce from conversation to conversation and kind of be all around. So if you asked anyone, they'd be like, oh yeah, he was there. Like I saw him a whole bunch. Like we hung out, we partied, whatever, whatever. But like, I'd feel like I wasn't even really there because the whole time I was just trying to figure out how not to feel out of place. Mm-hmm. Like if I felt even slightly like not quite sure, I would just have to figure out a reason to like leave that conversation or leave that room and go, you know, whatever, figure something else out. So yeah, it's funny. You look back and it's like, holy shit, man. Like, you know, I wonder how many other people were feeling that way too, because it's like, that's part of life too, is like, you always just assume that everyone else has their shit together and that you're the one that's fucked up, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
A lot of people that are fucked up.
And how did you get to the diagnosis?
Well, for me right now, I don't have an official medical diagnosis. Like I don't have a rubber stamp from a doctor right now. Mm-hmm. So I am self-diagnosed at this point. I am going through that process. We could talk about just that process for 3 hours, like what it's like for an undiagnosed adult. Like the whole late diagnosis process in adulthood is in, it's crazy, because here's what happens. When you make it to your 30s or 40s or 50s or whatever, and you're autistic and you've never been diagnosed, you've spent your whole life hiding your autism. Mm-hmm. And your whole life creating and running software programs in your own brain to hide the things that make you different. So you, all of your stims, you try to suppress all of your anxiety, all the things that are uncomfortable, like eye contact, everything else. You force yourself to make it. Like I tell people, like when I talk to people, it's very unnatural for me to make eye contact. But I can do it because I've spent my whole life training myself how to do it. And even right now, it's weird. I'm looking at a phone. I run a software program in my brain when I speak that's like tells me to look away, tells me to look back, tells me to look away, tells me to look back. And all of that is happening like semi-consciously. Like I'm aware that I'm doing it. When I talk to people and I tell people it's like this, like, when I'm having a conversation with you, I'll look away. And then it's like my brain has to go like this and keep turning my head back to look at you. You know what I mean? I don't do it with my hand, but I do it with my brain. And then it's like the whole time I'm looking at you, I'm like, okay, I'm looking away now. And then I'm thinking, have I looked away long enough? And now I look back. And now do I want to look at them for how long? 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds? And then do I look this way again? Or do I look this way now? Or do I look up? Down? Do I look back again? Do they know that I'm looking away too much? Is it weird? Do they think I'm looking at them too much or not enough? Like all that shit's happening in my brain while we're talking.
Wow.
Like, so it's like, and that's what it's like to be autistic. It's like you're creating and running all of these software programs on your own hard drive constantly, and they take up RAM. So what happens is all the stuff that's natural for other people, for neurotypical people, it's just a flow of a conversation. And the same thing is like with body language, hand gestures, facial expressions, changes in tone of voice, all of those things we struggle with. So it's like, if I'm talking to you and we're having a conversation and suddenly your tone of voice changes, I have to consciously figure out what that means. Whereas a neurotypical person just understands your tone of voice means something. And you just have this unspoken language that, you know, the majority of people have, where they just kind of understand each other's body language and each other's vocal things and facial expressions. But I don't understand that stuff. So to me, it's like, if your facial expression changes or whatever, I have to like consciously look at it and be like, okay, what does that mean? So then I have to run this program. Like, it's like this search in my head to be like, okay, searching my database of like past conversations, like, what does that facial expression mean? Okay, I think it means this, I think it means that. And it's like, I'm doing this while I'm talking to you. So anyway, back to the question. So what happens is, a lot of people who go through their whole life without a diagnosis, they're creating and running all of these programs on their own hard drive to hide their autism. But then what happens is, there's layers of that. So you end up in adulthood, you can get these people that have, your whole life, you've had like depression and anxiety and symptoms that look like PTSD type symptoms and stuff that looks like bipolar and like all these other things. So my whole life I've had depression and anxiety and like bipolar type phases, you know, like from the time I thought I was bipolar, I thought I just had depression, I thought I had anxiety. I was like, what is going on? But then when I finally discovered autism, it was like everything else fit under that umbrella.
Yeah.
It explained all of it, because I read this book in the last like 18 months. I've read about a dozen different books and like videos and fucking online articles and everything. And I've like suspected I was autistic my whole adult life. I've always like, I've read articles written by people who had Asperger's and I've been like, holy shit, I could have written that. But I also had this sort of like, what I've learned recently is kind of this like ableist attitude, where I would see other people who were autistic and I was like not as obviously autistic as they were. So I thought, well, this is weird. Like, I feel like when I read about autism, everything makes sense. When I read articles written by autistic people, I feel like I could have written them, but I don't like present in like an obviously autistic way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then I think about like, the more I research and the more I've learned, it's like a lot of the stuff that I do, some stuff that I do when I'm alone that I don't do in public and other things like that. So I started getting really into it like a year plus ago in the winter. And I was like, my relationship was like on the verge of falling apart. And I was like, what is going on? I'm like, I got to figure out what the fuck is wrong with me. And then I started just really going, okay, like, I came back to this, like, okay, what is it depression? Is it anxiety? Is it ADHD? Is it this? Is it that? And I started researching autism again, because I'm like, I have these autistic traits, these autistic tendencies. Like, is it autism? What is it? And then the more and more I read, and then I started doing some like online testing, and my numbers were like full on. Like, there's one called the AQ test, the autism quotient. And I did that one, and it's like, you end up with this score out of 50. And it's like, if the score is 33 or above, then autism is likely. Well, I scored 45. So I went, okay, this is pretty real. And then I thought, well, let me just do a little test on that. So I sent the test to like three of my good friends. And I said, hey, you guys take this test, because you're going to be my control group. And they all scored around 20, like 19, 20, and 22 or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. And I scored 45. So I went, okay, this is fucking it. And then I gave it to my partner to take the test. And I think she scored 9. You know what I mean? So I went, okay. So then I read this book by Philip Wiley called Asperger's Diagnosis Late in Life. And he wasn't diagnosed till his 50s. And he wrote this book, and it kind of like goes through all the steps that he went through and talks about like commonalities with people who are autistic who don't get diagnosed too late in life. And I read this book, and like every single page I was like, holy shit, this is me. Like, I was like, this, it was like it was written for me. Like, every single thing he talked about, I'm like, my life's been like that, that's how I feel, that's what I've gone through, that's exact. And I just, every single page, I pulled out the highlighter, and then I was really like, I don't even have to highlight this book, because I will just highlight the entire fucking book, because it's all in me. So that made me just go, holy shit. And then I joined an autism support group down in London, which was fucking huge. And the first meeting there, I was like, it was like the weirdest thing. It was like feeling like, oh, I'm in a room of my people and I've never met my people before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, imagine being like 8 feet tall and you live in a world full of people that are 6 feet tall and you feel like you're the only one. And then one day somebody says, hey, there's this meeting with tall people. You should go check it out. And you walk into this room full of like 7, 8, 9 foot tall people. And you've never seen anyone your height before, like in person, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And just, it was crazy. I was like, oh wow. Like I was like, I'm home, you know? So anyway, I'm in the process. Another thing that's really common, sorry, I'm rambling here, but I'll circle back to what you're saying. The process, because what I'm talking about is because people who are quote unquote higher functioning have been able to mask these symptoms their whole life, it's hard to get a diagnosis because you walk into the doctor's office and you say, hey, I think I'm autistic. And the doctor goes, what the fuck are you talking about? You're 40, whatever years old. Like they would have figured that out in elementary school. And then I go, well, actually I was in elementary school in the 80s and they didn't start even looking for it until the 90s. So, you know, they didn't even look for autism in schools until the 90s. And I graduated high school in 95. So I was ahead of that curve. You know what I mean? And a lot of us were. But then I went to see a psychologist and she was like, she's like, well, you know, you're looking at me in the eye. You're making eye contact. So that's not an autistic trait. And I'm like, yeah, but that's because I've taught myself how to do that. And I'm running a program, you know? So anyway, I finally found a place in Guelph specializes in autism and ADHD, and all of the counselors and doctors there either have autism or have ADHD or both. And I was just in the process of starting to do the official diagnosis process with them, but then that shut down with this whole virus situation.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I'm laid off right now, so money's a bit tight. It costs money. It's costs like $500-$600 to go through this process. I just don't have that right now. So like I can't spare that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start that process again. But yeah, I mean, everyone I talked to, even the people when I went to that first support group meeting. It was a great group, but there were a couple people at that meeting that told me, they're like, hey, like this, expect, because I was just at the beginning of my journey then, and they're like, yeah, expect this process of trying to get a diagnosis to take at least 2 years. And another thing, like in all the books I read, they say the same thing. They're like, you're going to get resistance from the medical community. You might have to go to 3-4 different doctors until you finally find a doctor that even understands. Most doctors are not trained in autism. They don't know how to recognize it in a higher functioning level. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the focus in autism is on kids. So there's this whole fucking giant group of people, these adults that are undiagnosed, that are walking around their whole lives thinking that there's something fucking wrong with them, and then they got to figure it out. And that's the reason why I started the podcast, because I was like, there's not a lot of information out there, and I know there's a whole bunch of other people going through this shit like me. So I started it, and it's been amazing to talk to different people who are going through the same shit. And it's like, so many times I talk to them and it's like they tell me their story and I'm like, holy crap, I feel like I'm talking to myself, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's long story short, or short story long, whatever it is. That's it. So I'm in this sort of self-diagnosed stage right now, which is the stage that has to happen before you get an official medical diagnosis, which I'm in the process of getting. And there we go. So, and I don't, you know, I want to get that done. I'm not totally sure why, but I think it's something that I do want to have. I don't have any doubt in my mind. Like, I've done so much research on this, and I'm a pretty smart guy. I can figure things out. That in my brain, I've spent my whole life going, what the fuck is wrong with me? And then I finally figured it out, you know? And I have no doubt in my brain this is what it is. It explains everything that I haven't been able to explain before. And all these things I've dealt with my whole life, like, you know, there's this anxiety and depression and cycling through addictions and like ADHD and problems with executive function and problems with like sensory input and all this other stuff, stimming, stuttering, like all these things I've gone through. I was just like, wow, why am I so fucked up? Like, I've got so many things wrong with me. And then when I discovered and researched this Asperger's or autism spectrum disorder thing, it was like, oh, all of that shit fits under this. And it's the one thing that explains everything else I've been dealing with. So it's like, okay. It was like a fucking light bulb went on. I was like, all right, you know. And another thing, sorry, one more thing about it is I think there's also like a bit of internalized shame that goes on. Like, I always have been like a pretty smart person. Like, I'm, you know, top 2% IQ wise, like I'm pretty intelligent, but like, as far as functioning in life, like I suck, you know what I mean? Like I can understand like pretty like big abstract concepts, but like, I can't remember to pay my phone bill or put on pants, you know, mm-hmm. like kind of that kind of thing. But I always thought like, no matter what, I'm like, I can figure it out. I don't need any help. Like, I'm smart enough to figure out what's going on with me. But I read a quote from somebody that said, you know, like when you're autistic, you spend your whole life trying to get to the starting line where everyone else started from, and you never get there. And then when I read that, I went, okay, like this makes sense. I can't spend any more time trying to get to a place where I'm going to be like everyone else, because I just have to accept the fact that I'm not like everyone else. I'm like me. I'm like other autistic people who are like me. And in order for me to be happy and live the best life I can live for however much left of it I'm going to have, and for my family and for my child, like, if I keep trying to be normal or like everyone else, I'm going to keep failing at that. And I'm going to keep being depressed and upset and frustrated and having issues with anxiety. If I just accept who I am and I make that my starting place, then I'm going to be in a better place to actually figure out what I can do and how I can do it and learn. And that's why, like, all these, the podcast that I'm doing has been a huge help for that.
Yeah.
And the support group as well. And I go to this support group in London, and I'm actually starting two more, one in Huron County and one in Stratford, just because the resources aren't there for adults. And I know there's more people like me who would love to have someone to talk to, you know? Sorry, I rambled, man. The thing with me is you're either going to get like a 2-word answer or a 2,000 word answer.
So you were saying about that.
Hey, dude, sorry, one sec.
Yeah.
Is it better if the phone is sideways, or is it better this way, or does it matter? It
doesn't really matter. I like it sideways. There we go. Sorry. Now we match.
Yeah, what's the fuck is that? Oh, that's my hat. Oh, yeah, okay. I'm like, what the fuck is working behind me?
Thanks.
Anyway.
Yeah, so you were saying that, you know, like, you'd rather be happy. Now, like, this has brought the self-diagnosis has brought more happiness to you, right? Because now you're like, well, now I know what's going on with me. Well,
yeah, now I'm learning what's happening in my brain. Like, I'm learning. dude, I've got like a stack, like a 3-foot-high stack of books I've bought in the last year about autism and written by people who have gone through this shit. And I'm learning, like, how my brain is working. So it's like, here's an example of something. Like, when I go to social situations, like, say it's like a Christmas family dinner, right? Like, say my partner, I go to her mom's house for a Christmas holiday meal. And like, both her brothers are there and their partners and like kids and maybe a couple cousins or mom's there. And so there's this house, and there's like, I went to one Christmas party from their family, and there was probably like 40 or 50 people in a house, right? For me, I can't handle that. Like, more than about 4 or 5 people. Like, I'm comfortable with like one-on-one, maybe comfortable sitting with 2 people. 4 I can do. Once you get to 5, I pretty much check out. I'm only half
really? In the
conversation. And once you get to like six or more people, I'm not even a part of it. I can't even listen anymore. I just tune right out. So I'm at this Christmas party and I'm meeting my partner's family and everyone's like, it's Christmas, they're happy. And I'm just like, there's so much noise, right? I'm hearing 40 or 50 voices. Blah, 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 blah. And like what happens with this, my kind of brain, is all the noise joins together. So it just becomes a wall of mumble. And I can't discern the different voices. So you can imagine that's kind of tiring, right? Like imagine hearing 40 people speak backwards. It just, like, so it just becomes this thing. My brain shuts down. So I'd go to these like the Christmas party and I'm sitting there and I'm like, I kind of shut down. So I'm just sitting on an end of a couch in a corner. Like I'll pick up a magazine or something and I'm not even reading it. I'm just flipping through it. And I'm just like trying to get through it. I'm not. And then my partner's like thinking I'm being antisocial, thinking I'm being rude, thinking I'm like not engaging with her family. Like I'm kind of coming off like an asshole. I'm not meaning to, but now like with this, now that I kind of know what's going on, I was able to have that conversation with her and be like, this is what happens. So this is why my brain just is shutting down. I can't, it's like imagine a laptop and you open like 40 tabs on your browser, right? Your browser slows down. You just get the spinning ball. It's like, that's my brain. My brain is just the spinning ball. And then someone asked me a question and I go, and I try to respond. And then they ask me a question and it's like, and I'm like, I'm not trying to be rude. If I was with any of these people one-on-one or one-on-two or one-on-three, I'd be okay. And even then, like after, for like 2 hours, I'm okay. But the thing is, it is making life a bit better because now I have explanations for things. I understand things. I can articulate things. I can communicate that. And I also decided very early in my diagnosis process that I was going to be just totally open about it and public about it. Cause I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'm not gonna hide. And I've always kind of been like that with shit in my life. Right. Like, I'm like, whatever. My music was like that too. Like I'm pretty open book. Right.
You did that line You did that line in Cobra track with Bender.
My life's an open book in a locked room.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, but I decided with this whole process to be very open about it and public about it. It's funny because this is another thing I learned in these like books I read and other people's accounts, that a lot of times like your family and close friends will not be supportive. They won't believe your diagnosis. They'll be like, you're full of shit, or just you're making excuses or whatever it is. And I'm experiencing some of that. Like there's some family that's close to me that they won't even acknowledge it or talk about it or even acknowledge that this is real. There's other ones that have said they're supportive. It's not my job to, what other people think is not my job. You know what I mean? My job is what I think. And so, you know, so I just decided, fuck it, I'm going to be public about this and just do it in the open, because that's kind of just how I feel it has to be done. And I'm learning about it in the open and I'm sharing what I learned in the open. But certain things have gotten easier. The self-acceptance has gotten easier for a lot of the things, because I'm trying to let go of all the internalized shame and blame that I've had my whole life of like, why am I so fucked up? Why do I fail at things? Because I'm like, I look at my life and I go, well, it doesn't really make sense because, okay, if you put 100 random people in a room, there's one person in that room smarter than me. Like, I'm in the top 2% of IQ. So my brain works. I'm fucking smart. I'm also super creative. I can write, I can draw, I can make music. I always am thinking of original, out-of-the-box creative ideas. And I'm a fucking hard worker. Like, my work ethic is, I fucking work my ass off. I'll put in long hours and I'll just work and get the job done. So I look at my life and I go, well, what the fuck is wrong with me? Because I'm smart, I'm creative, and I work hard, but everything I touch that seems really amazing just ends up turning to shit. And I just fucking burn out or blow it up or fuck it up somehow. And for a long time, I internalized a lot of shame and guilt around that. Like, well, I suck, I'm a fuck up, I'm a loser, you know what I mean? And then now I'm like, oh, actually, no. I have disabilities that I struggle with. Like, I have difficulty in understanding communication with people. I have difficulty in organizing myself. I have difficulty remembering things, you know? So those are not excuses going forward, but they are explanations for things in the past. So now I can understand those things, and I can, going forward, I cannot use those things as excuses, but I can understand and learn about the things that I'm not good at, and I can get help where I need it. So yes, that's the important part. You know, and that's really important. I'm a big believer in, like, you got to just take care of your own shit. I don't ask for shit from anybody. I don't want sympathy. I don't want anyone to be like, oh man, I'm so sorry. Like, it must be really hard. Like, fuck. I don't want anyone to bend over backwards to make accommodations for me or anyone else. Like, I'm like, life's fucking hard. Life's unfair. It's unfair for everybody. Some people are autistic. Some people are short. Some people are tall. Some people are skinny. Some people are fat. Some people don't have legs. Some people are smart. Some people are stupid. Some people are men. Some people are women. Some people are straight. Some people are gay. Some people are white, black, yellow, fucking red, whatever the fuck. You know what I mean? Any situation any of those people walk into, certain characteristics or traits they have could be of benefit or of detriment based on the context of the situation that they're in. I'm in a minority of people as far as functionality goes, being on the autism spectrum, but I don't want to ask for anything. I just want to be able to learn my, like, what I can do. That's also, maybe there are some people who do need help, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there are obviously, like, the in the US they categorize autism in like three, like as 1, 2, and 3, and like it's, that means just the categorization is based on like the level of support you need. So like level one is like quote unquote high functioning, or like Asperger's they call it. Level two is like you need more supports, and level three is like the more severe support needed kind of thing. But anyway, I forget what the fuck you just asked me.
Now, you were saying about people around you. Now, like, when I came out and said, you know, I recently became like a mental health advocate. I'm just something to go along with my podcast. And I've been doing a lot of like, just being real about, especially about counseling and how I still do counseling and everything. And I'm just being really honest. I've always thought that it shouldn't be such a taboo to go to counseling, and people, it should be like, I'm going to the spa basically. And now since I've been doing that, a lot of people have reached out and be like, they're kind of tiptoeing around me. You know, they're like, Shane, you okay? And it feels like I need to prove myself that, I'm in a good mood. I can do funny things on Instagram to show you that I'm in a good mood. Yeah. I'm not always sad. Is that like, do you get the same thing?
100%. And you know what? A thing that I find is very real that I encounter is like, I know some people who are pretty close to me who work in the areas of mental health. And one thing I notice is that this shit's fucking dirty. You know what I mean? It's down and fucking dirty and unpleasant. And I think a lot of people want to talk about mental health. Like, Bell comes out with their whole let's talk shit, and everyone's like, oh yeah, everybody, mental health. And they share some meme of somebody sitting in a yoga pose and meditation with their fingers and mudras, and they're like, yay, everyone, mental health. And it's like, do you know what mental health really is? It's like people, it's like when you're so fucked up, you don't even know what's going on. And like, I'm so fucking lucky in my life that I have had family and friends that have helped me out like more times than I can count. Because if I did not, I would be on the streets right now. I would probably be on hard drugs. And in fact, knowing that, I would probably be dead by now, because I would have been on the streets doing hard drugs like 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I could barely hold it together. There have been times in my life when I've hadn't been able to work for months. I've had like major breakdowns. I've had major depressive episodes that have lasted months. I've had like just been broke. Like not even that long ago, my car was getting repossessed because I was like having work issues and couldn't keep up with bills. And like, you know, and this is embarrassing. This is the kind of shit you're not supposed to talk about, because people get embarrassed. They get socially embarrassed by this stuff. And they don't want anyone else to know because it's embarrassing. Well, I'm like, fuck that. I'm not going to be embarrassed by it. I'm going to fucking tell you, because this shit is fucking dirty. It's not fucking fun. I'm okay right now. I feel pretty good today. I had a good day today. You know what I mean? I'd say overall, on like a day-to-day basis, like how I'm just doing, like as far as my mental health goes, I'm probably in a better place than I've been in a really long time. I have this process to thank for that. I have, you know, family I can count on one hand, like a couple of close friends to thank for that. But I have no fucking guarantee that I'm not going off the rails tomorrow. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it's this situation where you have to be like hyper vigilant. Like I have like an occasional beer now and again. Now I used to be wasted every night. I used to smoke. I used to do all kinds of drugs. I used to do all kinds of crazy shit. I don't do any of that anymore, but I don't know that a week from now I won't be. I think I won't be, because I know where that road goes and I don't want to go back down that road, but it's work to do that. And it's also work to just try to function. I mean, I have like calendars and lists and post-it notes and all this shit just to try to keep my brain organized to just do daily shit. Like I could go a month without changing the litter box unless I have it written down on my calendar to change the litter box. Cause my brain just doesn't know. My brain can't stay organized. It forgets things, but it doesn't forget them in a way like, oh, I knew I had to do something, but what was I supposed to do again? It forgets them like they just never existed. They just go poof and they were never there in the first place. So it's like trying to do this kind of stuff. And then trying to like function and like, you know, in a relationship and as a parent, I mean, that shit's really hard, you know, but I know these, I feel like all this shit, like people pay so much lip service to like, oh yeah, mental health. Like everyone just, if anyone needs a friend, like I'll be there for you. Mental health. And I just kind of think so much of that is bullshit. And I'm not calling anyone out because, hey man, intentions are great. But what I'm telling people is that, you know, that's this like sort of cheesy sugar-coated thing of like mental health that everyone talks about, but they don't know what it really is. And it's fucking terrible. You want to know what mental health is in a bad way? Like go downtown and talk to some fucking addicts. You know what I mean? Like that's mental health right there. It's not fucking easy. It's not easy when you're dealing with it. So, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I just want to be super fucking straight open about this shit, about my shit. I'm not going to keep anything a secret. And that's just because I feel like that's the thing that I can do, is at the very least be as honest as possible so that other people maybe you don't have to feel the embarrassment, because I'll just feel it for you because I don't care, you know, like, and not that I don't care. It sucks to be embarrassed. It sucks to be looked down upon. It sucks to be judged. I know all that stuff happens. There's probably people listening to this right now judging me, going, what a fucking idiot, can't get his shit together, making excuses for his life, blah, blah, blah. And if that's what they feel like, then they can go fuck themselves, because I'm just telling you what reality is. And, you know, that's my process, is to just be open about it and just be real about it, you know?
And is there like lack of education? Because I find that there's people in my life who use these key words that you just do not say to someone who's going through it, depression or anxiety, like how it's fake or that it's a burden on them or things like that. Should there be more stuff about how to deal, not even for us to how to deal with our depression or, you know, your SD, but how others should deal with people in their lives?
Yeah. Yeah. What I think, and this is, I'm a big believer in this. It's like, when I look at any organization, I look at, do you have anybody in your organization who represents what your organization is about? Right?
Yeah.
So say you, there's a famous meme that goes around the internet. It's like in Saudi Arabia, they had like a conference on women's rights and it was a room full of only men. Right? So you look at that picture and you're like, well, this is absolute utter horseshit. You cannot have a conference about women's rights that does not include women in the conversation. And to me, that's like an important kind of idea. It's like, I look at like, if there are these like these nonprofit groups that are like, oh, we're all about mental health in the community, I go, okay, cool. How many people are on your payroll and work in your office who are fucked up? Who are drug addicts, who are schizophrenics, who were abused as children and have depression and anxiety and have been on heroin for 20 years and are hearing voices and you know what I mean? And I don't say this to be flippant or try to make light, but I absolutely fucking believe it. It's like, there's organizations that are supposed to represent the autistic community who don't have any autistic people on their board of directors. Some of the big, big autism charities, right? So how the fuck are you going to be an autism charity and you don't have autistic people in the room? Fuck you. And it's like, if you're an AIDS organization, how many people on your board of directors of this AIDS organization have AIDS? If the answer is zero, then fuck your organization, because you're not actually representing what you're doing. You're just a bunch of people getting a paycheck and patting themselves on the back to like feel good about, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you're not doing maybe some good, but it's not real as far as I'm concerned. So it's like this mental health shit people talk about. It's like, I know people that are like, oh yeah, like fuck everyone, mental health, that when I've come forward with my issues have not been supportive. And that's fine. You don't have to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not asking for anyone to be supportive, but I just don't like hypocrisy. That's what bothers me. So it's like, you know, if you're going to talk the talk and not walk the walk, then it doesn't make sense. And that's just a starting place for learning. Everyone has the opportunity to learn. But the thing is, there's a movement with autism too in the autism community, hashtag actually autistic. It's like, if you want to learn about autism, go search on Twitter, actually autistic hashtag, and read posts from people who are actually autistic. Because we will tell you what it is that we experience, how we experience life, what issues we have, what we love about our autism, what is difficult about it, and like what it's like to live as autistic people in a neurotypical world. We'll tell you. Don't go on some big autism charity and read what they have to say from a board of directors that doesn't have anyone on it who's autistic. Mm-hmm. So it's the same thing. I don't want to hear about how to solve homelessness from a politician who's never been homeless, who comes from a rich family, who lives in a $1.5 million mansion in a fancy part of town. I don't want to hear that person's opinion on how to solve homelessness, because that person has no fucking clue. I want to hear how to solve homelessness from homeless people.
Yeah.
Go down and talk to them. They will all tell you what problems they have and how those problems can be solved and what they need. They will fucking tell you with their own mouths. And it's ridiculous that we don't listen to people about those problems. You know what I mean? So that's my opinion about that. It's just like, you know, a lot of people have great intentions and that's great. But when, you know, when when rubber hits the road, what really matters is like actually working with the people who live it. You know, if you want to know what it's like to be depressed, go talk to someone with depression. They'll tell you all about it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, there's another thing is, you know, you got to believe people. Don't, when people tell you what their experience is like, what people want, at least what I know people want in the community of people with autism is patience and understanding. Be patient with us, because we're fucking trying. We really are. We can come across like dicks sometimes, but our hearts are gold. We just don't know how to do it, how to do this communication thing. We don't know how to do it, and sometimes we come across as dicks. And so just patience, and like, we're trying. If I got to ask you to explain something three different times, it's not because I'm stupid. It's not because I'm not trying to get it. It's just because whatever order the words are coming out of your mouth and then going into my brain, something's happening and it's not clicking. It's like having verbal dyslexia or something. It just sometimes doesn't work. So patience and then understanding. It's like, understand. You don't have to actually know what we go through, but understand that we are going through something.
Yeah.
And that's important. And I there's a thing too, where it's like, and understand that like, we're not trying to make an excuse. Like, I've had tell people say to me, oh, you're just trying to make an excuse, excuses for things. And I'm like, I don't want to be like this. I'm not making an excuse because I want to live a life that's hard. I'm explaining to you why this is hard, but believe me, if I could snap my fingers and make it easy for myself, I would, because it's been hard forever, and I know now that it's never going to not be hard, and that kind of sucks a bit, but I just have to learn to accept it and be okay with it and work with what I can, but I'm not trying to make it hard, and I'm not trying to make excuses. And somebody said something to me a few months ago, a manager that I work with, and she said, like, if we could all operate from a place of assuming that the people you're dealing with have the best of intentions and are trying their best, then all of our conversations are going to be different, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you and I are working on something together and something's going wrong and things aren't really working and blah, 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 I could be like, oh man, fucking Shane, he's not fucking doing his part. He's not doing this and that. He's supposed to do this. And I thought he was going to do this, but he didn't do it yet. And you could be like, man, fucking Ryan was supposed to organize this part. He didn't do that. And he didn't show up till he was fucking late that day and he wasn't there. And blah, and we could just do all that. Or we can assume, like, we can assume that the other person either isn't trying or doesn't care. But if we instead assume that the person does care and is trying their best, then I can go, oh, Shane, oh, it looks like he really struggled with this part of this thing. So I can talk to him and find out what part of that was challenging, and maybe there's a part that I can help with, or maybe I could take that part on if he's struggling with it, and he could take part of the thing I'm working on, and we can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you come at your conversations from a better place when you make those two assumptions, that people are trying their best and that they care. And as soon as you do that in your brain, then all of your conversations are going to be different than if you don't do that. And I really love that. That's important for me. And it's something that I think, if we all did, it would help. Fuck, I rambled, dude. I'm sorry.
It's okay, man. So like,
how are you anyway? It's good to see you. I got to tell you, it's really good to see you, man. It's been a long time.
It's good to see you, brother.
You look good. You got extra hands.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I've been working out. I've been seeing your running videos. I mean, running pictures.
Yeah, I'm trying.
I'm actually so training for walk for deep depression on May 30th.
Where's that?
In London. They're from London. And they are raising money for DEA counseling here in London.
For what counseling?
DEA counseling.
Okay, what's that?
For mental health.
Okay.
So, this year it's a virtual walk or run. So you have to do it on loan, alone.
Okay.
So yeah, it's just, I've been pumping them and
nice.
Yeah. It's been good, man.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah. What are you listening to now? Are you listening to anything particular?
Gangster Folk.
Yeah.
I don't know, dude. You know what? I've been actually starting to write rhymes again. It's been like almost 10 years. So I've been starting to write rhymes again, and that's been pretty fun. But I'm listening to, I mean, I still listen to the shit I always listen to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fucking classic 90s rap. That's my jam right there. You know, it doesn't really change. There's a new all the new rap. Like, I'll check it out here and there, but honestly, barely. Like, I don't, it's not for me, and I get that. Everyone would be like, oh, you got to check out Kendrick, or you got to check out this guy or that guy. And then I'll go listen to like 3 songs. I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, Kendrick, I'm like, this guy's, I don't know, I guess he's awesome. It's just not for me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's no diss. It's just, I just don't get it. It's like, I like rap that's kind of like just rapping on a beat. His shit's kind of like stop and start and blah, blah, blah. It sounds like spoken word poetry to me. And I'm like, I don't know. It doesn't do anything for me. Super talented guy, obviously, but other than that, man, I listen to a lot of I've always been really big into like 60s and 70s shit, like folk and psychedelic, and you know, like the Grateful Dead and Simon and Garfunkel, and
yeah,
you know, I love like Kris Kristofferson, you know, that kind of shit, just like good songwriting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Good, well, I don't know if the Dead is good songwriting or not, but.
Oh, I meant to ask you, is London Music Hall where Ramos used to do Elementals? Because the back lot, the parking lot, looks so familiar. Of when,
it was the Embassy.
Oh, okay.
Which is burned now.
Oh, okay, all right, because. Did I ever tell you the Necro story? Necro and Ill Bill, when we brought him down to London?
No.
Oh, dude. So we did the show.
What happened?
And after the show, was Jeff, Dan, my friend Tom, and I outside, and we brought some girls from home with us. And Necro was trying to pick up one of the girls.
Yeah.
And then Jeff was like, no, 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 he's coming home with us. She lives right down the street with us, blah, blah, blah. And then Necro and Ill Bill called us ass crackers. He got so pissed.
Ass crack.
Yes. So we were trying to joke about that on the way home, but that was a...
Awesome. That's a good diss.
That's like something I did a hip-hop show in London.
That sounds like something DJ Moose would say. Fucking ass cracker.
But I did go to London Music Hall for Marr, Johnny Marr. Oh my god.
Oh yeah. I don't even know who that is. Is it good?
Johnny Marr, he's from the Smiths.
Oh yeah, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. I liked that venue. It brought back a lot of reverb vibes.
Yeah. It's a great venue. I had an amazing experience there just before my daughter was born. We went there. My partner was like 8.5 months pregnant, you know, and we went there to see Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic Zeros, which is a band which is probably my favorite band, like in the last 10 years, you know what I mean? Like probably my favorite, yeah, easily my favorite band. And I had been trying to see them forever, and I kept getting tickets and then I couldn't go. So that happened to me like 3 times in BC when I was living out there. Like they'd be coming, I'd get tickets to the show, and then last minute some shit would happen where I couldn't go to the show. And I was so pissed. I was like, why the fuck? The universe is not going to let me see this band. And then I was back here in Ontario, and they played there, and I got tickets. But I'm like, fuck, like she's like 8.5 months pregnant. I was like, there's no way this show's going to happen. So the whole drive down, I'm just like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you all right? Like, how you doing? Good, good. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, we're going to end up having the baby, like, in the concert. You know what I mean? But they were, it was a great venue, and I gotta give a shout out to the staff there. They were fucking wonderful. Like, we go up with our tickets to go in. The woman at the counter, like, looks and sees she's out to here, you know what I mean? Like, super pregnant. She's like, hey, would you like us to get you guys a stool so you can sit? We're like, oh, that's wonderful. Thanks. Like, where should we go? They're like, don't worry, we'll come find you. We walk in the venue. This bouncer guy just comes, finds us with a stool, and is like, here, so you can sit, which was super nice. We ended up sitting actually on what, you know, like the big columns, like posts in the venue. Mm-hmm. So we set up right, like, kind of so she could sit in front of one of those. And I could kind of stand sort of behind her so that she's sort of protected. You know what I mean? And then this other couple, the woman's like also super pregnant, and we ended up sitting beside them. So they got her a stool too. So there's these two pregnant women sitting beside each other with this big column behind them and the two guys on either side watching the concert. And it was just awesome. The staff were amazing. I just couldn't believe it. They were super gracious and wonderful, and it really made for a great experience. And then, yeah, we didn't have the baby at the show. We made it another couple of weeks, but yeah.
And I guess your Folk Fest is not happening this year?
I don't know yet. I don't know. It's the last Sunday of September, so I haven't made any decisions yet. We'll kind of see closer to it if we're allowed to, basically, you know. Mm-hmm. All the other Volkswagen events this summer that I've seen have been canceled, so mine's kind of the last one of the season. It's like literally the last one. People always say, like, they come to Volkfest, and then after that, the bus or the Beetle goes in the garage for the winter, you know?
Yeah.
So the last one of the season. So I'm going to hold out as long as I can before making a decision.
Cool.
I'm hoping.
I just found out that I had tickets for New Order and Depeche Mode for September.
Oh,
just found out. Yeah. Lawn seats, Budweiser stage, Labor Day weekend. How long would that be?
Dude, New Order and Depeche Mode?
Yes.
Holy shit. That's amazing.
Yes, yeah, $60 for a ticket too.
Woo, that's actually not bad.
I know. That was like $30 per group.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's being postponed. So.
Oh, really?
Missed out WrestleMania. I was supposed to go to WrestleMania Hall of Fame ceremony in Florida in March.
Yeah.
That got canceled. My dad was supposed to get married. That got canceled. Damn. And now this has got postponed. So. We'll see.
Fucking crazy. What's your take on all this?
COVID? Right now, I think, I was just telling a friend today, I think people are just over it. And they're putting down their hands. And they're like, I don't care anymore. I'm not going to wear a mask. I'm not going to take care of myself.
Yeah.
And because I live in a neighborhood, and I saw a lot of barbecues on the weekend. And I saw a lot of people going over to other people's homes.
Yeah.
Over the weekend. And I saw a big get together down the street at 12 o'clock after midnight doing fireworks. So, what? Yeah, I mean, that's not social distancing.
No.
And I think we'll see this more when the hot weather comes and long weekends come.
Yeah.
And people will be like, yeah, come over. I don't care.
Well, I think back to when they were talking about the whole flatten the curve thing, and they're like, we can't, everyone's going to get it, but we're going to do this whole stay away from each other thing just to, like, flatten the curve so that we don't all get it at once, right? But when you think back to that, now it's like everyone's talking about doing all this stuff, trying not to get it. But we're all going to get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to get it. At some point, we might have already had it and not even known. I've had in the last two months that we've been, you know, doing this whole thing, I've had like three colds, you know. My house has had a cold, like we've all had a cold like twice, where we've all had it.
Yeah.
Was that coronavirus? I don't fucking know. But none of us were sick enough to go to the hospital, but everybody's gonna get this fucking thing. So let's just fucking get it. You know what I mean? Like, let's just fucking get it.
And yeah. So, like, back in January, my dad was coming back from Vegas, and he
remembers. He's getting other shit in Vegas.
He remembers the moment because we had a man pass him in the plane, And he coughed on him.
Yeah.
And my dad's a germaphobe, so he knows when people, like, when he gets those germs. Yeah. And he left the plane, he left the airport, he got a cold. And my stepmom got a cold too. They were down with a flu for like 3 weeks.
Wow.
And I this was like in January, and I told my dad, I remember it was like around that same time that COVID was starting to make a buzz. And I was like, Dad, there's this new thing called COVID. It's coming from China, and this is what's going on. You should check it out. He goes,
yeah.
And I swear, like, my dad now thinks he had it.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah. It's crazy, right? I wish there was some way to just, like, get, like, even like a test where they could just mail you a thing and you could swab something and mail it back and just get
it's tested. Up the nose, eh?
Yeah, I've heard that. It goes in the nose and then it goes in your throat.
Yeah.
Hangs out there for a bit. So I don't know, man. This whole thing is so fucking weird to me. I don't know anything. Like, I don't pretend to know. I'm just kind of, I've been laid off for 2 months. I've been hanging out with my daughter every day. I can't really complain.
Yeah.
I've been lucky. If that, you know, that fucking CERB money came through, so I can eat, you know. But I certainly wouldn't mind working again and, like, making actual money, you know. But at the same time, I don't want to downplay. Like, it is serious, and people are dying, and that's obviously fucking terrible. I have an uncle who had it. He was in the hospital for 3 weeks. He's like in his early 80s. He's all right. He's recovering now, back at home. So, you know, it does hit close to home. Like, that could have gone very bad. And he's somebody that I love very much, who we're very close to, and mm-hmm. that would have been a tragedy for our family, you know. So I don't like take the whole thing lightly, but it's at the same time, I think there's a lot of weird shit going on, you know.
So before we wrap up, I was going to ask you, because a lot of, like, I'm a bar guy, and I was just talking to my therapist last week that I just miss the whole process of going to a bar and the simplicity of it, and just going to a bar, to sitting at the bar and talking to the bartender and having a beer.
Yeah.
How is it going to change, do you think?
Well, you know what's really fucked up now? They're talking about when they reopen.
Mm.
You're going to have plexiglass between the bartender and the customers at the bar. Dude. So imagine a bar where there's a whole plexiglass along the bar, and the stools have to be like 6 feet apart or something.
What?
So, like, at our bar, it's like I've got, I don't know, 12 or 15 stools along the bar. So we would have like 4 or 3 or something. You know what I mean? With this plexiglass between them. It's like, I don't want to fucking work there. You know what I mean? I don't want to work in that. I mean, I'll do it, because we all got to do it. We got to do what we got to do. And it's really going to be fucked up, because I miss that, exactly the thing you're saying. Like, I'm a bar guy too. I'm a pub guy. I love just going to a pub, grabbing a stool at the bar, having a pint, doing the crossword puzzle, order a fucking burger or some wings or whatever the fuck, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, having a couple pints and shooting the shit with the bartender, and, you know, and you chat with other people that sit at the bar, you end up kind of, it's a whole little subculture, a whole little world. It's a whole little thing. And it's like, as much as I have my social issues, like, that particular vibe feels good for me, and to do it in that way. And the thing that's cool about it is you can, I always like going to a bar by myself, sitting at the bar and, like, having a newspaper and a crossword puzzle. Because you can kind of, like, engage with people or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you can kind of, I love just sitting there with a pint and, like, doing my crossword puzzle. And you can sort of hear the conversations around you. And then maybe you kind of look up now and again and shoot a couple one-liners back and forth with somebody. And then you go back to your crossword puzzle. You know what I mean? Or you shoot the shit with the bartender a bit. And yeah, but I miss it, man. I really miss pub culture. It's like, it's a really big part of who I am. And like you, I really miss it a lot. So I don't know. It's going to be weird. I'm having these weird thoughts sometimes. Like, is there going to be a bar business to go back to?
Yeah.
or do I just go fucking become a lumberjack now? I don't know. You know, so if anyone out there is hiring lumberjacks, call me.
Call Ryan. Call the Fritz. Fritz the lumberjack.
Yeah.
Okay, so one quick story before I go. It's been a while, but speaking about you doing the bar, I remember this one blog you did when you were working at Alex B. Keaton.
Okay.
About this. I don't know if you remember this, but there was two guys, two like teenage kids, or I guess they were 19.
Yeah.
But they came to order. They didn't know what to drink, and you had to recommend them a pitcher. And then they ended up running out on the tab.
And oh, for real?
And then you noticed that they ordered, they bought by credit card. So you just rang up their tab with different beers.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
So wait, so they had left their credit card but then not paid their bill?
No, well, something like that, but you found out that you had the credit card.
Yeah.
Right? But they ran out. So you still had the credit card, and I guess that you like rang it out for different beers, and you got like
oh fuck. I don't remember that at all, but that sounds fucking funny.
I miss your blog, man.
That's on my blog? Oh, I gotta go back and find that blog. I'd love to read that again.
Yeah.
It's probably still online. I don't even know.
No, what I was going to look for it today.
Yeah. Somebody just posted, like, my buddy Peter Augustin. Do you know him? He's like a, you might know him in music world. Like, he was a music journalist and promoter and shit from the States, but he did a lot of work up here in Canada too. But he just posted the other day, he's like, hey, anybody have like an old blog spot that like from years ago that's still up, like that we can read now, like to go back to, you know? I was like, yeah, dude, I had an old blog spot blog somewhere. Like I couldn't even remember right now what it was even called, but I'm sure it's still on the internet, which is pretty funny. Yeah. I think I keep telling myself I got to start blogging again, but I don't know.
Yeah, dude. Like you know, seriously though, I loved your writing because it's very short sentences, and me being in radio and coming from the news background, we love those short sentences. So I really understood your writing.
Oh, for real?
Huh. Yeah.
I never heard that before. Now I'm going to, my first blog post is going to be like a 200 word run on sentence. I'm going to dedicate it to you.
Nice. My brother, thank you so much, man.
Dude, so good to see you, man. Holy shit. We're getting old. You're getting better looking. I'm getting fat, but you know, we're fine. We're doing okay.
Oh, I got to tell me, man. Don't worry about it.
We're still balling.
I went to my 20-year anniversary reunion thing at Waldorf, where Anna went. And
where what?
Where Anna Neeson Hay went.
Oh, for real? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah, we went to the same school. That's how I know you, Phil.
Waldorf school?
Yeah.
Fuck, that's why you guys are both so cool.
And I was sitting down with a friend of mine, and he was sitting next to me, and he's like, we're in the music room, and he's like, wow, this place shrunk. And I said, no, our guts just got bigger.
For sure.
But we have to get together, man, soon. We are so close.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. As soon as this whole shit's done and we're able to, man, like, we'll go belly up to a bar somewhere and knock down a pint or two.
For sure, brother.
Yeah.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
All right, homie. Thank you, dude. I love you, man. Take all the best.
Peace.
Hey everybody, this is Ryan. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you got something out of this show. If you'd like to support this podcast, please do so. You can find us on all social medias at The Life Autistic. Look for us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. Please like, comment, share, send us questions, thelifeautisticpodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to support this podcast, please reach out. We are setting up a Patreon account soon for those who would like to support. We've had a few people, a number of people message and ask me how they can support this podcast, which is much appreciated. And I do currently have something set up on the site called Buy Me a Coffee, where you can throw a few bucks our way to help us with producing the show. So anyway, again, thanks for listening. Reach out. Would love to hear from you. And take care. Peace. The Life Autistic.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.